whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
I'd add one thing to what Sean Payton said. Young and hungry is dangerous, but when you combine that with an experienced head coach, you've got a roster that's young and hungry and a guy that knows how to do it, calling the shots, that adds to the danger.
Matt Ryan on the danger that is the Denver Broncos.
And more so because of Sean Payton, he's saying?
Payton is occasionally aggressive, right? He's one of the things he's best known for is the surprise onside kick in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, is he, though? Doesn't he give you some wimpy punts once in a while?
Oh, for sure.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say, it's not like he's pretty inconsistent, I think, on that, which might be better than some guys. But Peyton has not won a playoff game since the 2020 playoffs, when they beat the Chicago Bears, and I believe that is the Mitch Trubisky MVP game.
He won the MVP in a losing effort?
The MVP.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a losing effort. Yeah. He has not won multiple playoff games in any year as a coach since that Super Bowl. You look at his playoff history, and it's win in the wild card, lose in the divisional. Win in the divisional, lose in the conference championship. Win in the wild card, lose in the divisional. Win in the wild card, lose in the divisional. Like, it's every year. Which I guess actually isn't maybe too unfamiliar around here right now.
803-0550. On the playoffs, on changing expectations. Reading from, we talked yesterday to Tyler Dunn, who had his one-on-one, his interview with Sean McDermott, and posted a piece at his website, golongtd.com. And one little passage in here, McDermott's answers about believing in the players and fourth down decisions. And, you know, like, Tyler doesn't shy away from certain topics. He brings up 13 seconds, and McDermott says, you don't bury it, you learn from it.
He brought up Mahomes.
He did.
In the 17 draft, McDermott said he was not going there.
Right, that's right. Yeah. But he gets into the idea of fourth downs and believing your guys and going for it. And I'm looking at the Jets game, because he brought something up very specific. And he said, we kick a field goal. I did that because if we had converted on fourth and two, we'd only have X amount of seconds left to do anything. And had we converted before half, but you hear boos. They want me to go for it every time, speaking of the fans. They want me to go for it every time. Listen, if I was in their seats, I'd be saying the same thing. But I have to do what I feel is best for the team. That's the Jets situation. What is the situation against the Jets? It's third and 10 at the Jets 29. They pick up 8, and then they let the clock go down to 2 seconds, call timeout, kick a field goal. If that's the Chiefs, if that's the Ravens, do they feel more of a push to, let's see if we can whip one into the end zone here? I mean, Bass ends up making a 39-yard field goal there. So, you know, you're not that far away with 24 seconds left, 20 seconds left. You could take a couple of rips at the end zone. But his point in this conversation is with Tyler is, they want me to go for it all the time. And there's one other passage that jumps out at me about expectations. And he says something, McDermott here, that Brandon Bean has said about the Bills. And I wonder, is this because the fans feel this way? Is this because it's just, it's unavoidable? But he's talking about expectations. And he says, in 2022, we go to LA, open the NFL season. We beat the defending world champs. We come back here, we beat Tennessee. And all of a sudden, things were up here. Like, he's he's gesturing about expectations. You learn from every season. I remember some of the players walking through the hallway about week 4, 5, 6, whenever it was, and it looked like they were carrying a load of bricks on their shoulders. And I learned from that season. The weight of the expectations was weighing on guys. Mm-hmm. And this actually lines up with a couple of things that have happened this year. This year at training camp, they move on from all the veterans, and it's a younger team. It's Josh's team. The story's about him taking more of a leadership role. Bean said something to the effect of emotional baggage, that the Bills had had 4 years in a row, so many years in a row, of hitting their head on the ceiling of either the Chiefs or the divisional round, 13 seconds, the home loss, blah, blah, blah. And that turning over the people in the room, this is what is basically suggested, is a way to help them break through. And McDermott saying they feel the weight of expectations, maybe not 1 week, but week after week, what does it do? It makes them not play to the best of their ability. It's my job to try and free them up as much as I can. He wants to get them in the right headspace every week. That's what he said. And I would...
Which might point to why he has seemed looser this year, more, you know, the group changing over too could be a part
yep.
of that.
Yep.
It feels very, they feel very different, right? So, like, I remember they were this is maybe before the Jets became the divisional favorite because, like, the betting odds kind of moved as the season went on, and they were still, like, the fourth leading favorite to win the Super Bowl. And the Bills put out some promo video before the year, and it was, like, Dawson Knox and Dalton Kincaid were in it, and they were talking about how doubted they were.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, yeah, more than maybe recently, but you're not really that doubted. Like, okay, a couple people on TV picked the Jets to win the division. But most still expect you to be an amazing team. But what really matters is what they take in, right? Like, if they are constantly bombarded with, you got to win the Super Bowl, you should win the Super Bowl, you're the favorites, and this year it's only some people think that, then maybe to them that feels like a massive change.
Yeah. He mentions that game in L.A. That's Vaughn's first year. That's when...
That's everybody
said
they should win. They had to win the Super Bowl.
It's right after 13 right. seconds, so it was, this team is unstoppable. They only got better, and of course that season did not get to where it ultimately wanted to get. So, all right, well, where are they now? They can... try to say there's no pressure.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But there's, right? Everybody? This team is under pressure.
Yeah, there should be.
And if they're whatever, like, it's his job to keep everybody loose and make sure they're focused on, you know, the task at hand. And Tyler asks, like, how can you do that? And he's talking about keeping guys in the right headspace. But, man, you could say you were doubted all year long. You kind of can't say that now. You are the number two seed, and you've beaten the Lions and the Chiefs in the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the favorites to win the Super Bowl, it is the Chiefs and the Lions, and then the Bills and Ravens are tied for next. And that's it.
All right.
The Eagles might be there, too. Like, those are the five teams that people think can win the Super Bowl. So, you know, you might have been doubted in August, but things have changed. And you're an 8.5-point favorite at home against the Denver team that has had a nice season.
Yeah.
And now it's, like, I almost want to say, you know, it's not a play-in round. I'm not trying to undervalue Denver. I'm sitting here telling you I'm nervous about this game because I'm nervous about every game. And in part, that's because, Joe, we have gotten to the time of year where nothing that happens matters other than the win/loss. That's all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you lose to Kansas City because you're missing linebackers. Okay. Like, I see reasons why you lost to that team, but... it's 5 months of you lost to that team. And
yeah.
And the legacy is just continue to be defined by not getting by the Chiefs. They have two massive hurdles. One, the divisional round. Two, the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And they've got to win this week to get to those two hurdles. And then stumbling over either one of those
mm-hmm.
is going to feel like a little bit of a purgatory again. It's hard not to. I know these calls are waiting. I know they're ready. They're on standby. Can't get by the divisional round. Can't beat Andy Reid in the playoffs. They are so ready.
Mm-hmm.
So the pressure is on.
If they don't win in the wild card round, those people are, you know, those calls are in right away, and they're going to be fueled up even more. Although, like, it would be, that's why, like, I can't fathom it. Like, what it feels like if they were to lose this game, it almost might feel like a fluke if it were to happen. Like, it would be more than your fatal flaw of you just can't beat the Chiefs in the playoffs, or you hit your head in the ceiling in the divisional round. If they were to lose this game to Denver, and it's because, you know, the Broncos have a fake punt or a blocked punt that goes for a touchdown, and, you know, they get a couple of turnovers, they win that battle, and there's a fumble that goes their way, then it's, okay, well, you know, that's the NFL. That happens. And it might, I wonder if it would be treated differently, or if it would be treated exactly the same, which is just, you know, this is what you get. This with this coach, you're going to have games like that in the playoffs. And like that really, it's interesting reading McDermott's piece from Tyler because he doesn't really come off like he is like the pressure is eating him alive at all. But it's mostly on him. Like Allen's the MVP favorite right now. Like it should be on Allen too, but Allen has done it when he's got there. And maybe he would feel more confidence. There's less of a boiling point on him because he has done it when he's been there before versus McDermott, who, man, just the knives are out from a lot of people. If there is anything that he does that contributes to them losing.
Look how much the knives came out when they lost to the Rams. They lost a game against an NFC opponent, and Colin Cowherd the next day was all about how the Buffalo Bills organization is fully squandering Josh Allen. And it's like, I don't think there's some inept operation that can't do anything right. It was the first loss they had in 2 months.
Yeah.
And it was immediately right to, and you know, they made a mistake calling a timeout after the quarterback sneak.
Yep.
But that's how close that always is. Like if you are McDermott, with a quarterback this good, if he wins the MVP, we'll find out. But you're a head coach with a quarterback this good. It's worth mentioning, John Harbaugh has a similar life, except he has a Super Bowl. So he's got a shield. Nobody else does, right? Andy Reid wins it all the time. Harbaugh's got a shield for winning it. Even Sean Payton. Like, Sean Payton got a Super Bowl. Once you get that one time, you're made forever. Mike McCarthy got one.
That one might have been long enough ago where he's back to...
It might be. Yeah. The Bears want to talk
Although
to him,
he won it more recently than Peyton did, right? Yeah, maybe that's not different. That might just be Dallas because didn't it go like Peyton, McCarthy, Tomlin all in a row?
Maybe. Point is, there's no shield for McDermott, and he is as under pressure as anybody in the entire NFL to win.
Well, his shield is maybe that... You know, his shield is the owner and the organization, right?
Like, well, no, I mean against the narrative.
Okay, against
I mean,
the narrative,
I mean
right.
To push back.
Because his shield, in terms of him not, you know, acting on... You saw a coach in, you know, look at the Chargers, for instance. Brandon Staley completely became a different person 1 year to the next, probably because his owner, you know, got in his ear about something and told him, like, your job's on the line here. And if you keep going for all these stupid fourth downs... And like I don't believe that that's the case with McDermott. So it depends what he cares about, but it would be hard for me to believe that he doesn't care at least a little bit about everyone coming after you if this doesn't happen.
One way to indicate that he does care about that, and we'll get to a call here too. Caller two, give us a call 803-0550 on McDermott, on the Bills, on you know Super Bowl or bust, however you want to say it. He mentions in here he got awful tired of hearing the Bills' window was closed.
Okay.
So, he hears some stuff. Jay in Hamilton is up. Hey, Jay, good morning.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
So, a few weeks ago, I called about how I, for the first time as a Bills fan, was, you know, taking a new approach mentally and emotionally to all these games and just, like, taking them game, just, like, even week by week instead of play by play. And the playoffs you hear, now the beast is released and I am ready for Sunday. This is an absolutely big game. Of course, it's the playoffs. But the Broncos are absolutely no pushover. And the thing about these games, of course, is they're all one-and-done games, right? And the thing about the Bills this year for me has always been, you know, typically speaking, if they've had a bad game, it's usually been because of some kind of defensive failure. So then as a fan, we all say, okay, we've got a confident coaching staff. They're going to fix some problems. They're going to button up, and next week they'll get it right. Well, that luxury is gone. So I think going into this game, the one thing that I'm going to notice, and I think is the case, is Sean McDermott is not the same coach going into the playoffs this year as in previous years. I think for the first time, really, as a fan looking on the outside in, he knows that the road to the Super Bowl is absolutely through Josh Allen. I think you're going to see him going on fourth downs, left, right, and center. I don't think you're going to see him playing very close to the chest and being very conservative. They know the Broncos have got a lot of talent, and Sean Payton has coached the hell out of this team this year. And I think McDermott will be doing what he's been doing all year, to be honest with you. And I've been one of the guys that's been a bit critical of some of his decision-making, too. I think he's going to have this team ready to go, and yes, the pressure is on, and they know it. McDermott knows it. And if he wants his team to be successful, it's going to be through Josh. And Josh will take it. So I'm very confident about that. I just want to make sure that provided we win this game, we've done so in a very confident way, injury-free, and seeing that McDermott knows, I know how my toast is buttered, and it's through my centaur, Josh Allen.
Thanks, Jay. To this conversation, one thing I'll be eager to see, and we brought this up yesterday with Chris Brown. He talked with Joe Brady on the pregame show, and Brady's talking about as many possessions for Josh Allen as possible. That's what you want. Like, these turnovers this team is forcing are great. We're getting the ball back in Josh's hands, and that's how this team wins, is get Josh the ball as often as possible, which is something they did not do in last year's playoffs. It was not about getting as many possessions as possible.
Nope.
It was a ball control style. So, I don't know, different opponent. If they play Baltimore, are they going to feel the same as they do when they play Denver? You know, one thing a head coach has to say, and it's true, is that every game is going to be different. Every opponent's going to be different. How do they look at Denver? How seriously does he take Bo Nix? You know, you'd love to get inside a film room and hear McDermott and Babich, like, take a look at the film and say, oh, this kid can't do X, Y, Z. Like, all right, we'll just do this. Because we'll dare him to pull off this play, and we don't think that's in his arsenal, or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
With Lamar, it's a little different. With Mahomes, it's a lot different. You know, blitzes and all that stuff. Like, what you do to ultimately try to dictate what happens.
Yeah.
So, McDermott feeling it and leaning more into Allen and going for fourth downs, we'll see.
Well, that... I want to look at numbers on the playoffs and whether they're different for McDermott on this, because in general, like that idea that he's ready this time to be different, I don't have any big questions about him in fourth down decision making. Like, he is one of the better coaches in the league at it. I'm not really even worried about him being too conservative in a game like this. I would be more worried about, I think, the two biggest things that are questions he needs to answer in the postseason, which are your defense showing up and looking dominant, and two, your clock management. That to me is more what's a question of McDermott than fourth down. I think fourth down, he's one of the better ones. It's the clock management element of it, and on those two things, which have, I mean, there are gaffes in the playoffs in recent years on both those two questions. In recent memory, I've got their defense getting lit up by a couple of really good teams, and I've got a clock management gaffe at the end of the Ram game. So I've got recent memory of both of those things. And those are the two things I need to be different. Not the fourth down decision making, not him being, ultra conservative. I think he's been better on both of those fronts.
John in Baltimore up next. Hey, John, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. Bills Mafia, everyone. This is Ravens country, and I woke up one day and my team left town. And, I got on this ride with this team right here. I would do anything to get back on that ride. When Denver came to Buffalo back in the early 90s in the playoffs, and, it was an amazing game. Can you imagine if there were the throwbacks this Sunday and it would just remind us of back then, the ones that, actually watched it. But this is our year, I believe. This team is something about these players on this team. Like Amari Cooper, he's a unique individual. I mean, everyone. I'm just saying, for example, one of them. But I believe that this is our year. And, and all the Sean McDermott people out there that called for his head last year, who are you going to bring in? I mean, people that come what I'm trying to say is this. I'm sorry. A little emotional. But they fired coaches, and then you're in the headlines, and it's unstable. This guy, he's a great person, man. And look at the players, how they play. I mean, you got to stop the negativity, man. Let's enjoy this for the ones that are not here. For Ralph, for Tim Russert. I mean, come on, man. This is our team, man. This is something special going on here. It's special to be a Bills fan. I get a lot down here, man. That's all I hear is negativity, four in a row. What if we win four in a row? That's what happened to us. That's why we're unique. That's why we break through tables. Okay, look, I'm the biggest Bills fan in Maryland. Okay, self-proclaimed. I love you guys. Just Stop with the negativity. Let's enjoy this. This is a ride, man. This is a ride. Look at the guy we have throwing the ball. I mean, we have one of the special persons. He has no jewelry. I mean, he was born and raised in the middle of nowhere, man. Wow. And he was rejected. And, yeah, so I'm sorry. I'm going to overramp a little more. I love you guys. I want to hear you guys like I always do every morning. Have a great day, and go Bills.
Thanks, John. It's going to get intense for you next week if the Bills and Ravens both win.
There isn't the want for that ride is why there are so many McDermott detractors. Right? That energy, the want for that ride here to the Super Bowl is why there are people that are ready to go on McDermott.
I mean, listen, you said a lot of emotional things, John, that I would say are not wrong, but a lot of teams feel that way about their team. Like the Ravens think they have a special team and their fans love their players and their coach, and it just comes down to results at this point, which, you know, fair or not, that's how it works. This is the highest level. So if the story stuff works for you, then that's great. The story finishes off better when you finish on the top.
Yeah.
803-0550. It does feel to me like, not that people are looking past this game, but that it really doesn't dial up until next week.
I know.
Can I say that? Am I wrong? Is that a common feeling out there, that it really doesn't dial up till next week?
It dials up this week, but not to the degree that, you know.
Sure, they could lose to Denver. Sure, a home playoff win against the Broncos would be awesome. And
there's some nervous energy going into this game.
Yes, because it's the playoffs. You have to be nervous energy.
But next week, a week from today, there's a pit in our stomachs.
A week from today.
On Tuesday.
If
it's Baltimore.
You've made it to the Final Four. You're playing for a spot in the AFC title game, a spot the Bills haven't been in years. And you're playing, probably a team that beat you by 25 this season.
Yeah.
So I do think there's an element of everyone's just kind of head down until next week when it's really time to go. They just got to make sure they don't mess up and that they get there. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Thanks for the phone calls. We'll check on Paul Hamilton next on the Sabres, who picked up their win last night, a shootout win. Shootout wins means it's not a regulation win. Do you know how many regulation wins they have? In 41 games. Halfway point of the season.
Ooh, they've got...
This is not negativity. They won. They got their 2 points last night. That's fine. How many regulation wins do the Sabres have in 41 games?
They've got 17 regulation wins.
That's a fine, very optimistic and friendly guess. They have 11.
So you're saying it's less?
They have 11. They have 11 regulation wins.
11 regulation wins.
11 regulation wins.
In 41 games?
Yes. 11.
Yikes.
The Flyers have 9 in 40.
Really?
Yeah. Anyway, Paul next on WGR.
Capitals almost had too many men on the ice there. Sabres were carrying the puck right of the player who had yet to come off the ice. Nothing happens as a result. Here's the one-timer, scores! Tage Thompson unleashes the TNT, and a power play goal makes it 3-2 Buffalo.
One of the first moments of the game. Brought to you by Firth Jewelers. For the moments in your life, go forth to Firth. Sabres win. Shootout win over the Washington Capitals. We bring in Mr. Paul Hamilton to chat about how things went and all that good stuff. Hey, Paul, good morning.
Hey, folks. How are you? I just wanted to, for those of you who were in bed at 12:03 a.m., which means everybody who's around you right now, and many of our listeners, at 12:03, the NHL sent out that they changed Buffalo's first goal. It now reads Alex Tuck from J.J. Paterka. Oh. So I guess they see something in the replay that when Paterka took the shot, it somehow hit Tuck somewhere. And went in the net. I have re-looked at the replay. I do not see it. I'm not looking at it slow motion either. But so Tuck has 2 goals and a shootout goal.
Very nice.
So what, there's some guy from the NHL at like 11:45 in his pajamas. Just like, you know, I'm going to look at that goal again.
Yeah. And I'm looking at the tweet. The tweet came at 12:03. I was done with my article. I was driving home. So I obviously had to correct my article when I got home.
Yeah, NHL, go to bed. Like,
and the tough part is the public address announcer at the arena has to go back in. Buffalo's first goal.
In the empty arena.
Yeah, just, you got to make it official.
At midnight.
Yeah, what I found out, and I didn't realize, you know how the shots change after every period?
Yeah.
In every arena? And I found out why. I was talking to Lance and Mike, and they said that the NHL audits every period. So they audit the period to make sure the shots are right. The NHL are the ones that change it. They took the assists away because it was Paterka from Tuck and McLeod, because the NHL decided at the end of the period that one of the Capitals defensemen, the puck hit his stick and went to Paterka. There was no control. I've seen assists given on that goal in that situation every time. I mean, I've never seen it not be an assisted goal. They took the two assists away before they changed the goal. It was just Paterka unassisted for most of the game. So McLeod never did get his assist back. At least Tuck and Paterka wound up with points, which they should have. But that's what happens. The NHL at the end of each period audits the shots, and they decided at 12:03 to audit the goal.
All right, Paul. So it turns out there's even more reviews in hockey than I even knew there were. So all right, we'll just move past that. The Sabres win. Thompson scores. Tuck with a nice game. Tuck with the shootout goal as well. That top line, you know, Paterka, we thought he had one. Thompson had one. Tuck had one. You know, looks like whatever. There's an injury that Tage is dealing with. That they're sliding him a little bit. How do you feel?
He's been playing
wing, right? Yeah. He's not taking face-offs. He's playing wing instead. And the fact that there's still some production there, I mean, I guess that's a good sign. He's always playing hurt, it seems, though.
I wondered about that when he went to the wing, but I asked Lindy Ruff on the road, you know, what went behind the thought process, and he explained, you know, that he was trying to free him up to get some shots because he had gone 11 out of 12 games where he had two or less shots. He had five shots in the one game where he had more, but he wasn't shooting the puck, even though he had points in like five straight games or four out of five, whatever it was. He wasn't shooting the puck the way he should be, so he felt from the wing it might be easier for him to shoot, and sure enough, he did. Yes, he had his best game he had in a while from a shooting standpoint. He set up Zucker for three assists in that game, but unfortunately gave the puck away in overtime to lose the hockey game. But overall, 5-on-5, I thought he did have a better game. And then last night he was asked specifically if there was something wrong with Thompson, and Lindy did answer the question and say yes, he has been playing injured, and that's why he's been over at the wing.
Another blown lead, Paul. They escape with the win. They're able to get through it. They had a bunch of chances in overtime where they could have ended it as well. Was there a little bit of a here we go again when the Capitals tied it late?
No, there wasn't, and that's why I thought they had a good game. This wasn't, what we had seen recently. I thought they played well throughout the game. If you're going to beat the number two team in the National Hockey League, the Washington Capitals, who are a very good team, you're going to have to play a good game. I thought they took Alex Ovechkin out of the game. I don't think he was a factor whatsoever during the game. So I thought they did a good job defending him. Overall, I thought they did a good job defending, giving 25 shots up in regulation time. They actually blew the lead three different times. Washington never led in this game. And that says something that's different from the Sabres. Usually, once they've blown a lead or two, then it gets away from them and they get nervous. And what happens. And that didn't happen. It was just 1-0, 1-1. 2-1, 2-2, 3-2, 3-3, and then they win it in a shootout. So, no, I did not see any panic at all, even though it was late in regulation time. There was still 4:23 left, and, you know, people were commenting, yeah, but they only had, it was four or five shots. They didn't have many shots. I think it was four in the third period, but they did have opportunities. They did miss the net a lot, which they didn't get rid of that. They even took the penalty that it's like, oh, here we go, at 1:01 in the third period. And it's like, it's a 3-2 game. They take the penalty, and it's going to give the other team momentum. No, they killed the penalty and gave themselves momentum. I thought They played pretty well. They really did a good job killing that penalty. They played well afterwards, so I think the bench got a lift from them killing that early penalty in the third period. And even when they get when Washington gets the goal, it was really, I thought, the only time in the third period they were in any trouble. And Lindy Ruff, you know, was kind of disgusted about it afterwards of that sequence because we gave the puck away. We were, had been on the ice too long. So now we're, we've extended the shift. And, yeah, it was a lucky goal. The guy knocks the puck out of the air. Mm-hmm. Owen Power was actually next to him. He should have tied Protas up. But, he, you know, Lindy Ruff, it was just an extended period of time in the offensive zone for Washington because they had guys on the ice that couldn't get off. Other than that, I don't think that was the only shift of the period where I thought, oh, wow, they're really getting played here. You know, yeah, Washington had a couple of opportunities, but Buffalo did too, and I think some of their opportunities in the third period on Charlie Lindgren wound up going wide. That's just something that they've got to figure out with shooting wide. It's something that they do quite often, but they were able still to find a way to win the hockey game.
Paul Hamilton joining us on the Western Hotline as we chat about the Sabres' win last night over the Capitals in a shootout. Paul, if we're looking at the reasons the Sabres got into this spot that they are, which is, you know, currently last in the East and trying to climb their way back in, there's probably a lot, but a big umbrella reason might be their young players that have that are supposed to take steps really haven't, whether that's Quinn, Paterka. I want to get to Samuelson specifically because it seems like, you know, there's more and more of a groundswell of support about like the idea of buying out Samuelson or finding somewhere for him to go because it just has not gone the right way, whether it's injury or a million different things. And I wonder if you think there is anything salvageable there with Samuelson because, of course, they did identify him as a long-term piece that they thought this is someone we want around for, you know, 7 years.
Whoever's saying that right now, I don't think has been watching games since he came back. Since he came back, to me, he's been the old Samuelson for the most part. You know, sure, there's been a couple of hiccups from here and there, but I would say since he came back from injury, he's been the Sabres' second best defenseman behind Byram. I think he's played extremely well. He looks like his old self. He kills plays. You know, he's, I think, one of the key reasons why they came into the game 11 for 11, killing 5-on-4 penalties. They did give up one power play goal in that game, but they had that key penalty kill in the third period. So if this continues throughout the – we still have another half season to go, I would say absolutely not. I wouldn't be buying him out. I wouldn't be looking about anything with him other than keeping him on the defense. I've talked to Lindy Ruff about it. I've talked to a couple of teammates about it. And I've talked to him about it. And I think his play has improved immensely since he's been back. As I said, there have been some hiccups from time to time. But if he wants to play like that, I have no problem with him being back on their defense.
Paul, away from the team, there is a big name that might be available on the trade market in Vancouver. The GM made a pretty harsh comment last week about Elias Pettersson. I would hesitate to ask you about any big trade idea like that around the league, but the reason I even think to bring it up is he is struggling this year, no doubt, is he doesn't have any trade protection. And I feel like if you're wondering about the Sabres in a big move, like that's your first step, I think, into whether or not, you know, even considering whether that's a good idea.
Talent-wise, you know, he has had some very good seasons in the NHL, as you said, until this year. And a lot of it, you know, they're talking about the battles he's had with JT Miller. You know, as I read about things that have gone on with that, it seems like he can't handle the criticism that he gets from JT Miller. JT Miller is a type of player that's not going to pull any punches. And I guess he doesn't pull any punches with Elias Pettersson either. That makes me say, well, don't the Sabres have a bunch of those guys? You know, that, you know, maybe are a little too sensitive, or, you know, whatever you want to call that would be my hesitation. is that. Is it sounds like the type of player the Sabres have and the Sabres players need to get rid of. So that would be my only comment on that. From a talent standpoint, until this year, you're certainly talking about a guy who is an excellent offensive player. That's my hesitation. I don't know if I want to pursue players that might be sent too sensitive to criticism, or if a teammate, you know, wants to get in your face. I want teammates to get in each other's faces. I want them to hold each other accountable, you know, and if he has trouble with that, I don't know.
Paul Hamilton, his appearance brought to you by Railax Honda. Railax, we got this. Sabres win and off to
Ottawa.
Ottawa, yeah. I said to Joe, Paul, in one of the breaks, you know who's in the final Eastern Conference wild card spot right now, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Montreal.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Which is
That's a little bit out of nowhere,
it's
I would little, say.
It's a gut punch. They've won 8 out of 10 and rocketed right up to the final wild card spot. Montreal.
And it started when they played the Sabres. That 8 of 10 is when they, and you know that's. I mean, the Sabres did have a 7 of 9 along the way, and as goofy as it is, here's the NHL. This is a typical NHL stat. The Sabres just broke their 3-game losing streak and are 4-2-1 in their last 7. Mm-hmm. So if you sit there and talk about 4-2-1, oh, they're playing pretty good hockey. But they just broke their 3-game losing streak.
Yeah.
That's how numbers in the NHL look with the way they do their standings and the whole thing.
Thank you, Paul.
Yep.
Paul Hamilton joining us. Sabres win. Ottawa coming up. Seattle.
Ottawa, the Kraken. By the way, by points percentage, Ottawa is the would be above Montreal. They're having a nice little season too themselves. But
yeah, the Sabres. I remember they're 6 points out with 41 games remaining. Last year they were 7 points out with like 55 games remaining or 52. So 6 points. Doesn't sound like a lot, but you are behind like
every team.
9 teams.
All of them.
So it's a lot.
Yeah.
And games in hand, you know. They got a win last night, but while Montreal has that final spot, Montreal also has a game in hand. Yeah.
What's amazing is it continues to look like the playoff pace is going to be in the 80s. And it's like, eventually someone's gonna knock that out. Eventually someone's gonna go up above, you know, 90 to 92, and it's like, oh, there's Montreal in an 85-point pace. Actually less than that, right? 84, yep. 83, sitting in the final spot. Imagine if the final playoff spot is like 85 points and they still don't break the drought. I feel like a missed opportunity. Huge missed opportunity to do that.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Howard coming up. He'll join us at 8 o'clock. We'll chat about the matchup with the Broncos and have him pick the playoffs as well. Now that we have the full bracket, you know, the whole path, we can see what Howard thinks is going to happen. Jeremy and Joe, you can give us a call, 803-0550 on WGR.
That's the stat of the day.
All right, stat of the day. This is brought to you by Empire Electric, your residential neighborhood electrician. Visit empireelectricians.com. So the Jaguars are in the hunt for a new coach, and Trent Baalke, their GM, will make the selection again. There's two different versions of the stat of the day on Baalke and the Jaguars, and he also had a job previously with the 49ers, right? He was in San Francisco. This will be his 6th head coaching hire. And Here's the stat of the day.
Okay.
In NFL history, there have been 10 coaches fired during or after their first season with a team in less 10 years. 10. 3 of them were hired by Trent Baalke. 10 coaches have made it a year or less.
Uh-huh.
He hired 3 of them.
3 of them?
3 of the 10. Just one guy doing that. All right, here you go.
And he's staying. He's going to get another one.
He is. So there you go. Stat of the day. Howard's here. We're going to chat about the Bills and Broncos matchup. I have a question about bagels for him, too.
About bagels?
I got a bagel take.
What, has he never had a bagel before?
I'm pretty confident he's had a lot of bagels. You know, not like a fruit bagel.
He was in New York enough, right?
Yes.
That's what you do, yeah. Right? When you go to New York, you get
bagels in there.
All right.
Tonight also that golf simulator league.
All right. What am I going to do with that?
Go watch it? I just want to see what it looks like.
All right.
The simulator they're hitting into is like the size of a movie screen, I guess.
And they have real sand that they can hit out of?
There's a real green and sand area around it. So like the green area, I think it's like 50 yards maybe.
Yeah. What channel is this on?
Couldn't tell you.
Am I going to stream it somewhere? I got to log in again?
It's on primetime NBC. No, I don't know.
Somewhere. Fine.
ESPN.
All right, I'll take a look.
Wow, ESPN. Not like Peacock 3 or something.
Right. 803-0550. It's Jeremy and Joe. Howard coming up. We'll pick the Bills in the playoffs and chat Bills-Broncos coming up.